In dinners, you drink with a customer, you drink with a team, and it's expected also that you drink a lot of the so-called Mautai, the schnapps, which is 40 to 50% alcohol, and you drink three little cups with a number one, three little cups with a number two, and then you turn around and appreciate each other. This is actually a very nice gesture, but on the day after you need to recover.
Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. My name is James Kennedy. I'm the CEO and co-founder at ProcurementExpress.com. We take the hassle out of managing your company's spend with magical features, but we're not here to talk about that today. Instead, I've invited along Jens Meyer, who I met at the CFO Forum conference in Prague last year, where he gave an extraordinary talk, Digital Transformation, Everywhere, Everything, All at Once. And it kind of blew my mind. If you should listen to this podcast, if you're curious about what's happening in China and how it's going to affect all of us, Jens has a peculiar understanding of how it is having been taken over by a Chinese company. We're going to talk about that today. We're going to talk about the changes in the automotive industry. It's going to be a fascinating discussion. So Jens, thanks very much for coming along. Maybe you could just introduce yourself more fully with a bit of your background for the listeners who aren't familiar with you.
Yes, thank you very much, James. I'm very happy to be here. Also, was a good meeting at the CFO Forum Europe. I'm Jens Meyer, actually Dr. Jens Meyer, so I have a PhD in business administration. I worked with Bosch for almost 25 years, had different stations in my career in the United States. I was a CFO there. In the Czech Republic, actually 5 years I worked there, and lately I was transferred to Italy to become here one of the executive members and responsible for all the commercial functions of a company called VHIT, Vacuum Hydraulics Italy. It sounds very technical. We also try to find different names, like very high innovative technology, but the name is VHIT, and we had in the past plants in Brazil, China, and here the headquarter in Italy.
Very good. Well, before we get to that, just earlier in your career, you mentioned you've worked in the US, I guess Europe by default, and you've had this Eastern experience now as well. What did you learn most from your time working in the US?
So the US is a long time ago. It was from 2007 to 2009 during the financial crisis. So I experienced everything, the Lehman Brothers crash, Obama as a president. In the United States, I would say at that time, it was a pretty hierarchical organization, very top-down driven, command by control kind of leadership culture. But it was very, very interesting and effective management. So was different than in the Czech Republic, to be honest. So the Czech Republic, the people are more laid back. It's very important to have a personal relationship in the Czech Republic. The people work for their bosses, and if the boss is okay, they do everything they can. While in the US, I would say, like also in Germany, people separate between the business and the personal relationship. But this is also what I really appreciated in the Czech Republic.
Yeah, that's interesting. In my company, we have this idea that you bring your whole self to work. And some people don't like that idea. Like I like the idea of I am the person I am when I'm at work and when I'm at home, more or less the same. And I find it a little bit stressful to have a persona for each. Although I meet other people and they love that idea. No, my home life is my home life and I'm a different person at work. And they have almost like a facade. Sounds like you enjoy being somewhere in the middle or?
I mean, we all have to fulfill a certain role. So this is the expectation of our stakeholders, of our bosses, of our owners. But I cannot split myself. So for me, it was very easy in the Czech Republic. And I could do a lot with my team back then, introduce many innovations, also digital innovations in the controlling and finance area. At least for me, I need to be myself in any respect. And you got to be authentic also.
Yeah, you and me are the same like that. What are the trends that are happening at a high level, at a 10,000 foot view to start off with in automotive?
Okay, so you had fantastic years in the past, before the diesel crisis started. And the diesel crisis, I would say, accelerated one megatrend, which is the CO2 emission-free cars. So that was really the booster to speed up the CO2 regulations. You know, in the EU, we are not allowed to sell any combustion engines from 2035, and other countries have similar approaches. So this is the one megatrend that drives, of course, the electrification. But besides electrifications, there are many other solutions, H2 combustion engines, H2 fuel cells, hydrogen, synthetic fuels, so e-fuels. And this development is still not fully decided. So there's a big trend to electric cars, but there can be other technologies coming up. The second big megatrend is connectivity and digitalization of the car. So from a physical car that we used to know from the 70s, we have now a connected digital car. Infotainment, autonomous driving is getting more and more important, and the car has become a smartphone on wheels rather than a physical car. So to describe that. So both megatrends require big transformation on OEMs and tier ones and the whole automotive industry. Huge investments are necessary. And some companies have to bet on several horses at the same time. So the cash is really important in the industry at the moment.
So was it what would you describe as an OEM to automotive suppliers? Is that their history? And how has that impacted that business now that things are changing?
So OEMs are Volkswagen, Toyota, so the companies that assemble the car and sell the car. Then you have in the supply chain a so-called tier one supplier, which is it's also VHRT, who sell the components directly to the car companies, to the OEMs. And then our suppliers are tier two suppliers. We are also in some cases tier two suppliers, as we supply a pump to somebody who assembles it to a system and then sells the system to JLR, Jaguar Land Rover, for example.
So the OEMs, I guess, still have the brand and the connection with the consumer, which is good. But the tier one and tier two, it's totally changed. So Elon Musk is famous for, you know, almost metal goes in one side and a car comes out the other, and there's no tier one or tier two at all, as far as I know. So this must be creating panic.
Of course, Tesla is an OEM. I mean, one of the famous, one of the new electric car companies who popped up and who also overtook the traditional car makers like Volkswagen, Toyota, BMW. So Tesla was one of the pioneers in the area of electric vehicles.
We hear Elon Musk all the time talking about not just creating the car, but the way they're creating it is radically different. That's the big change. So as a tier one supplier, what did VHIT have to change? I guess the old cars were no longer necessary or on the way out. There's far fewer parts in these electronic parts, which means, I guess, a lot of tier one providers are going to either thrive or go to the wall. And what was the strategy there that VHIT adopted?
So VHIT, vacuum hydraulics pump, maybe I'll show you a vacuum pump real quick. This is a simple product. You have plugged it on the camshaft of a combustion engine and it turns. It's purely mechanical. There's no electronics in it. This is our currently bread and butter product. We sell it with 6 million in Europe, but it's related to the combustion engine. So this product will vanish. And if we had not reinvented ourselves, we would have died. So what we did is we looked at the trends, and the battery car has an e-axle. So this is the transmission, the drive of an electric car. And this requires the cooling of this e-axle. And there we developed this product, which looks completely different. You see, we have a plate circuit board with capacitors, microcontrollers to steer the speed of the pump. The pump cools the oil in the e-axle, and we have electric connectors. We have also a motor inside, an electric motor, where you need a stator and a rotor. So And these competences we didn't have, but we developed that and were able to develop an electric oil pump in 4 years from the idea to the first nomination of Porsche, which is part of the Volkswagen group.
Amazing. I mean, it must have been, it was no guarantee that that innovation was going to be possible. It's super difficult to come up with a new product and you're more likely to fail than succeed. So congratulations first on that. And I guess that's when Bosch became interested in VHIT as a, and that's where your background came from, right? You were in Bosch and then is that, you were part of the transition there?
Maybe to clear it up, Bosch was the 100% owner of us. So we were 100% subsidiary of Bosch in Italy. But Bosch also has the problem, as many others in the automotive, they need to spend a lot of money on different technologies. Yeah, if you look for an electric car, you need the battery, you need an inverter, you need the e-axle itself. So there's so many new technologies that require cash and that they could not finance everything. And that was when they said, okay, it's maybe better to sell VHIT to a third company that has more cash, that has where we can develop better. And this is when we went on the market. And this was a 3-year sales process that started in 2019 in November 22. Actually, we are now 1 year with a new company, and this company has a lot of money, is one of the top 30 automotive companies in China, and we developed very well. So it was a very good decision and was good for Bosch and for Weifu High Technology Group, which is our new owner.
Fantastic. So if we can go back to the beginning of how that started, let's think about the change management. You decide, okay, we need to be acquired. What was your approach in terms of keeping everyone on board? I'm thinking of the staff, all of your stakeholders. This was obviously going to be a huge change. Was that something that you developed in private and then rolled out? Or did you, was everyone aware, okay, this is, we're going to need this change? What was your approach there to making sure everyone transitioned properly?
I must now say I started here in 2019 when we already won the project. So I can only say that people were fascinated by doing something new, but most of them had a background as a mechanical engineer. So they needed we needed to develop that competences. Some of that we did in-house. Of course, we hired also experts, electronic engineers, systems engineers, software programmers, and step by step we developed that competence. Also worked with external consultants, and we are now able to program that plate, which is the brain of the pump, ourselves. And of course, there's a certain enthusiasm that develops over time, and when you have the first project and then the second project, we now also won the Nikola truck 2 years ago, which is the first electric truck in the world. We won other projects with the JLR, for example, Jaguar Land Rover. We won the electric platform, which is a big project, one of our biggest. And in China, we could win with our Chinese sister company, BYD, which is the market leader in China, ahead of Tesla and Volkswagen. So we are now, with all those projects, recognized as one of the players in the market. And that's a big success. And then the motivation goes up step by step.
Going from an established player, but this is a step up. It's kind of a Cinderella story, like we were saying. It sounds like the company has radically changed. Has the culture stayed the same? Has the feeling of it stayed the same? Or is it like a brand new startup almost now?
It's a startup within an established company. We also thought of splitting and make two companies, because still at the moment, this is our most profitable product, and we have 95% of our sales with that still. But we didn't do that and change the skin of the company and develop those competences. I would say, have a great IT department. They organize a lot of trainings. We merged also the R&D with IT. We grouped them together. Yeah, so I think everybody needed to change. We must be involved in the electronics, and our vision is smart global mechatronics and beyond. So this describes the mechatronic transformation that we are in, and that we have. You never complete a transformation, but we have almost all the competences now on board to do it all ourselves.
Getting the BYD deal, was that a benefit of the new owner being able to get access to that sort of market?
Actually, we acquired that project when we were still with Bosch at the last months, but it was a very good argument for the Chinese company, who didn't have so much turnover with BYD, to acquire us. So for them, it was another good argument to buy us, as we had already a global footprint with China, Brazil, and Italy. And then they had even a better access to BYD as a customer. And this is fantastic. And as you know, BYD will come to Europe. They will promote their electric cars, and they are very, very competitive. They also have started to build a plant in Hungary after the Japanese car makers like Toyota and the Korean car makers like Kia, Hyundai. This is now the third Asian, not invasion, but the third wave to the European market.
A takeover or an acquisition is difficult to everyone. Everyone knows that's difficult. Everyone knows they're difficult to execute, even more difficult to make them more successful. So what were your anxieties about the change? And before we get into what was the truth?
So the anxiety was not so much with our management team. I think we had a very good impression from the first moment, because the new Chinese owners are actually a joint venture partner of Bosch in Asia. So in Asia, you need a Asian company to start a business, and Weifu was a Bosch partner for 40 years. Even Bosch has a 15% share of Weifu. And I have to say the mindset, the culture is pretty similar. This was very good. Of course, it's a Chinese company, and there's some typical Chinese culture that is in. But it even helps us, because in China, you are much, much quicker. The Chinese are very, very goal-oriented, so they take a lot of effort to achieve the targets. They have even two R&D shifts, for example, in the big companies. So at BYD, Weichai, NIO, Geely, the lights never go out. So when the one R&D shift finishes, then the night shift continues to develop on a product, and then they are very, very quick and can beat many European competitors.
That blew my mind when I heard that. So I think of R&D, I think of, you know, people in ivory towers wafting around, drinking cappuccinos, coming up with great ideas. But this show, if you have a shift work on this, and it's purely to be able to... So here's a question. Why run a shift for R&D? Why not just have double the office space and more people, you know, working at the same time? What's the idea there?
Honestly, the idea... is not that to double the R&D workforce, it's to work continuously. You know, this is so to work in the morning till the afternoon, and then in the afternoon through the night, so that continuously you have this development.
So the same teams are working in the morning shift and the afternoon shift. So I start something in the morning, and then...
And a colleague takes over, and you hand over the intermediate results, and he carries it from that and then hands it over again. So that's maybe unusual for us as office people from 9 to 5 or 8 to 6. So there's no interruption in the development process.
Okay. Well, when you say that, that's the first clue as to why I feel like Chinese companies are doing so well. That attitude is obviously a different way of looking at things. I would never have considered that. So working harder, is that, would you say that's true? Is that fair? That there's a culture of more work. That's the stereotype.
Working harder and working faster. Speed is everything. So if the customer has a request, I mean, we tend to give him the perfect solution in China. It's just important that you give him something very quickly, and the customer accepts it. So speed comes over perfection. This is also one big advantage in China. And of course, the government plays an important role with the incentives they set. And this is why China has 1/3 of the global car selling is in China, and 60% of the global EV vehicles are sold in China. Yeah, they have such an advantage because they ramped up quickly with the government subsidies. And the BYD Seagull, for example, it costs 10,000 euros. They will adapt it for Europe, so it will be maybe still below 20,000, but then they enter a market segment where no other OEM, car maker is at the moment.
And that's obviously going to change the market itself, such a big change, not just the not just their share of it. But just before we get on to that, so in our industry in software, we have this idea of develop quickly. I think Facebook used to say move fast and break things. And that's a kind of a culture. And I can understand that because we can roll it back, right? We can quickly fix things or put it back the way it was. But when you're developing like a physical product, don't cars start blowing up on highways and things if you do that too quickly, or that's the fear, or what happens? So you deliver it and then the OEM will either reject it and tell you to go back or say it's okay. Or I don't fully understand how you can be quicker with something where you're going into manufacturing into millions of vehicles.
No, this is of course in the sample phase when you start developing. It's not the final product, but you can develop and give a perfect prototype, or you can give a already good prototype that you can further improve. And I think this is the main difference, that they are much quicker in the first prototype, in the first solution. Of course, in the end, you have certifications, you have a lot of tests before you can bring a product to the market. This is the same in China. Another maybe interesting aspect is in China, you have a very, very big loyalty to your boss. So actually you have a very hierarchical organization again. They also want to have one person responsible for the unit. So this was maybe a change also from Bosch, where you had two heads. Bosch normally has a commercial head and a technical head. The Chinese always want to have a general manager. And the loyalty to the boss is extremely high.
Okay. So you said two things there. I wonder if they're in juxtaposition or they contrast. So I get one is moving fast and I guess making changes quickly and learning quickly. And then the other side of it is a culture where it's important to save face or to appear to be good. So on the one hand, you're delivering things quickly, sacrificing perfection maybe. And on the other hand, you don't want to. Is it that it's actually okay to be imperfect? Is that it in the first place? Because those two concepts seem in contention with one another. Or is this just about the personal, how you act around the office and how you're dealing with people on a day-to-day business basis?
Once again, the perfection in the end needs to be there. So you need to have a good, perfect product.
So the main thing is to get it out quickly, hit that deadline, don't slip. That's it. That's the thing that everything is, let's say, evaluated on first. Was the deadline hit? And then trusting that with enough rhythms and iteration, then you'll get to the right solution. Okay. Because I know, as an engineer working in companies, Europeans can be a little bit prickly and like challenging their bosses. I've certainly experienced that day to day. And so did you have to change your behavior at all in order to, or train your team at all on how to change behavior? Or is this something they found out on the job? How did you discover that this was a very important thing to do?
No, I think in the relation with the Chinese, they know the Western behavior. And I think they are very, very open also on that. So what you also have to tell the people, if you are on a business in China, the dinner is in some cases even more important than the meetings before. So the business is done many times in dinners. You drink with a customer, you drink with a team, and it's expected also that you drink a lot of the so-called Maotai, the schnapps, which is 40 to 50% alcohol, and you drink three little cups with a number one, three little cups with a number two, and then you turn around and appreciate each other. This is actually a very nice gesture, but on the day after you need to recover. And then also the personal relationship is very important. So to gather around, to spend time with your colleagues, to invite them for dinner, to do some things. This is like paying on an emotional bank account, and it pays off in the end. So that's something that is there, very important as well.
This relates to, I guess, you sounds like you really bring your whole self to work, like we were discussing earlier. Like you are, people want to know you as a person, not your professional persona, or get to know that. Many years ago, I had a job working in Europe, and we'd go around, you know, in different European centers, and it was a multinational project. And I was very new, 22, but the Irish people had a reputation for drinking. So when the project finished at the end at 5 o'clock, everyone turned to the Irish team and say, okay, where are we going to drink? And I was like, I don't know. But I said, but you're Irish, you must know. Like, and even no matter where we were, that was what we were expected to do. So I tried to fulfill the stereotype.
Yes. And these stereotypes really hold for China. We also did the karaoke after the dinner. So you must also sing. No? This is expected. And sometimes also even the nomination of projects, you have to drink a certain amount of alcohol to get a project. And this is then maybe 300 milliliters of this schnapps. These were stories told to me from the Chinese colleagues. But overall, it's it's a very good collaboration, and we're really happy. Also, we are now a Chinese, European, Italian company. And with the Chinese OEMs entering Europe, we have better chances to sell our products. We can sell the Weifu products in the aftermarket. So we have so many new business opportunities that this selling was really an absolute great thing for us.
Well, it sounds like a Cinderella story. Out of maybe, if there were any anxieties, the worst thing to contend with sounds like was a hangover. But apart from that, it's been a massive success. It's a very, very interesting story. Congratulations on being, you know, pivotal part of that, I guess. It takes a lot of skill. Must have been a big career achievement to get it done. Moving a little bit to yourself and your career, I asked you about some of your superpowers. And when I send this question to people, they really struggle or worry, but actually you have some very interesting ones. So apart from drinking to get the deal done, I guess we'll put that to one side. What is your favorite superpower, and how do you like to use it?
So I'm a world citizen. I love to be in different places. You can see it in my career. And I also learn the languages. So one of my powers is that I can speak Czech. So I never gave up learning Czech when I was there. And it's really interesting because you can understand Polish, Russian. And one superpower I discovered in my last vacation, where there was a quiz to recognize a song or recognize songs, I'm really able to know the artist and the song title after 1 or 2 seconds. And there were three of these quizzes with 100 people, and I won all of the three times. And then in the end, the moderator said, the entertainer said, okay, you must moderate with me the next time I take you out of this game. This is one superpower. Like I said, I'm open. Sometimes also HR people say, Jens, you must differentiate between distance and near and closeness. I don't know how you call it in English, but again, I cannot split myself, and I'm the person I am. And I'm telling a lot of things. I'm also asking for a lot of things, and maybe this is too much for some people. So I have to slow down myself on that. But I'm very interested in people. I love all kinds of people. I try to understand the way of thinking. Yeah, and I like to interact a lot.
When I was a kid, again, I was 18, I went to Israel to live and work on a kibbutz. First real time working outside of Ireland. And I remember I went there and I saw there was a zookeeper on the kibbutz. And this guy was exactly like this other guy I knew back in Ireland, you know. And now it made me realize, actually, you know, people are far more similar than they are different. And now actually I enjoy, if I go to a new place, trying to figure out, this guy is like Paul, or this guy's like, you know, like almost the identical people can be in different countries, you know. So people talk about the differences, but I find the similarities fascinating, you know.
Exactly. And also, this is maybe something I try to come with similarities and always try to see what drives the person and do I have a similar interest. And as I'm very diverse and, you know, I did fencing, I'm I'm also dancing when I go to the fitness studio with my wife. We say, okay, we have the gym and the Zumba class. And then they say to my wife, the Zumba class is over there. And then she says, no, my husband is going to the Zumba class. I go to the machine. So it's maybe something. I love to dance. So this is something about me.
Cool. Well, and she sounds like a great guy to have at a party. So maybe I'll have to try and with the singing and the dancing and everything that you can.
I hope I still come over serious enough. You know, this is
I think authenticity people go for, right? You've obviously got your academic qualifications and all the things you've done, so you don't have to worry about your image, I don't think. But it's fun to be able to have these outside interests as well. So just to wrap up, your talk was great at the CFO Forum, really interesting. When I saw the $10,000 car coming, it blew my mind about how the R&D works. It was really open. And I want to say thanks very much for being so open about this. It's a little bit unusual to find people who are actually so good at communicating and open enough to talk about these interesting career transitions. So thanks for that. How can people reach out to you if they want to hear more, or if they want to hear about your story, or they want to get some Zumba classes maybe?
Yeah, Zumba classes, I give body pump classes. I'm a Les Mills instructor. Maybe you know that company, also a very nice company from New Zealand. They have this fitness classes, body pump, body combat. But you can reach out to us on vhrt-wafu.com. This is our company homepage. I can encourage everybody to visit that. It's very interesting. It shows our strategy. It shows our vision. And much of that, what I said today, is also there. Also, you can reach out to me personally on my email. Maybe we can share it after the video.
Great. Yeah, I'll include a link to the website. And
and of course, I mean, at LinkedIn, you can find me under Jens Wilhelm Meyer.
We'll add a link to your LinkedIn as well into the forum there, onto the comments.
And I would be happy if we stay in touch, and if maybe some people who are also in the business with Chinese companies would connect with me.
Interesting idea. I like that one. Yeah. Okay. So if you have had a similar experience, I think Jens would love to hear from you, and maybe reach out in the link below. I'd like to say thank you very much. If you've got this far in the podcast, congratulations. And thank you very much for listening. If you like this type of story where we interview business leaders and get their experience on their, whether it be career or business-wise, please let me know with a comment, or you can email me directly, james.kennedy@procurementexpress.com. Thanks very much, and I'll see you again soon. Jens, it was great fun talking to you.